Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 785. It's Tuesday. It's day one of the MLB wildcard round. Playoff season is upon us. That means regular season is done. That means fantasy baseball season is pretty much over, unless you're degenerates that do best ball for the playoffs. You're looking at me, too, so it's okay in that regard. But regular season's in the books. The Cubs have won. The Tigers have won. The Red Sox have won today. Sorry. Dodgers are up 1-0 because Shohei Ohtani hit a moonshot at 118 miles off the bat, miles per hour off the bat. So, yeah, baseball is live and well. But for the first episode of the offseason, my guest is always, who you can find on Twitter at BreakingBen_T, we're going to do a two-part review of his main event team, his best main event team. Same thing we did last year. Episode one, we go through the draft, like the woulda, coulda, shoulda, the roster construction, how that maybe played out throughout the season. And then next week, we will go through his fab throughout the season and to see how he dealt with maybe said roster issues or statistical issues or things along those lines to keep in his, I'll let him say what overall position he finished. But before we get to that, Mr. Ben Tidd, how are we doing, my friend?
I'm doing good, Bubba. Glad to be on another show right off the bat, starting the offseason strong. But you kind of mentioned it before, the Yankees had a rough game one loss to the Red Sox. So hopefully this will pick up my spirits a little bit.
I hope it will, too, because I think thinking of a thing that made you some extra shekels should make you feel pretty good about things. That should help cozy things over just a little bit, I would hope. So, yeah, it was game one. Hey, you got two more. You're at home. Got Rodon. And then you got then Schlick could happen. Schlick could happen on Thursday. And he could be the next legend in New York before all things are said and done. So we'll see how that pans out. But before we get to, we'll talk postseason some other time. But what position overall did you finish?
The team we're going to talk about finished 12th overall.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
I'll take it. It's being fourth after week 25 was surreal. And then because I hadn't been up there in a while, and then the way my team tanked in terms of hitting, it was annoying, but I can only do so much in 2 weeks. You can only do so much. So this is how the chips fell, and I'm happy with the outcome.
Definitely. And I believe if I did my math correctly, I could be wrong. There's 57 leagues, correct? Main event leagues?
There were 57, you're correct.
So that's 855 teams. Ben finished 12th. Some good friends in the Discord, Scott Slezak, finished second, jumped into second place over on the weekend. Dave Petrozil, I believe, finished fourth. And then there's many other friends. Todd Hoppe ended up winning the whole thing, of course. Ran away with that towards the end. But, yeah, Ryan and I felt for you in our little group chat the three of us had. That you kept showing us your hitting stats. And it's like there's nothing you can do at all. You're not going to stream anything because you're not benching the guys that struggled. That was just the luck of the draw, I guess, is how that one panned out. Your pitching was up and down, but you were looking for saves. And you actually got saves. It felt like at least you had chances more often than not. So, yeah. And I I'm not just 99% going to be about you. But the one league where I told you, my OLAC, where I was anywhere between second and fourth, like off and on for a while, it was all about hitting for me. And my hitting was so good. Streaming guys and everything got me up to second. It fell apart the last couple weeks as well. Like I told you guys in the text, I ended up finishing fourth out of the cash, which is great. So that'll be a whole other recap on Bubba and the Bloom later tonight. But yes.
Sorry, Bubba. That stinks.
Yeah, second place on Friday, fourth place on Sunday. That's a big one for you right there. Not overall, folks, just in the league. Not overall. Just going to clarify that real quick. I'd still be happy with fourth overall. All right. Let's get to it, Ben. If people are new to this show, which they could be, heck, who knows? They might have stumbled upon it thinking it's a football show. You never know. But you did three main events, correct?
That is correct.
And this is not your Mike the Mouse New York draft?
Correct. This was the third one I drafted.
The third online. And final one. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I just wanted to recap that for a few people to clarify a few things. First off, what draft slot did you have? As we'll go over this, let me pull up the old the draft board for those that are watching on the YouTube. I guess I can see it for myself. You had the ninth pick. I don't know if you can remember this far back per se, but where were you wanting to draft in this? Like KDS?
Oh, KDS. I think I think for a lot of my teams, I decided just to leave it 1 through 15, if I can recall correctly. Maybe at least starting out, I did it because I think I drafted in this spot in one of my other ones as well, one of my other main events. And actually, I can look it up. So I picked 9 here. Actually, yeah, so I probably didn't want to pick 9th because I picked 9th in my first, in the New Jersey main event is actually what my pick was. And I picked 2nd in my first online draft. So I probably had KDS set to be like 5th maybe. I don't know. Because of the way the main event is, it's kind of like a DFS contest to some degree. You kind of want to switch it up with your strategy. At least that's why when I do three leagues, I kind of want to switch up draft position if I can. But having 9th was fine, though. It's I don't think I can look at my KDS right now, but it's probably relatively in order.
Yeah, straight butter. That's usually what I do for the most part, and go with where the deck is handed to you. You said you like to try to do things differently in all three of your main events. Are you talking about just different draft slots, which obviously could relate to different ways you build because of who you get at number one? Or is it like, hey, one draft I wanted to go maybe heavy pitching, one I didn't, so on and so forth? Is it primarily just who you have taking first, you go from there?
To remember what picks I had in the other two drafts, I actually have my main event, what I call my roadmaps, up right now. I save the file so I can go back and look at it. And in this main event we're going to cover tonight, my plan was to go 3 hitters to start. Whereas in my first main event, I went hitter, pitcher, pitcher. And then I forget what I did in the second one, but the plans had varied as well though. Cause in the second one, I planned on going hitter, hitter, hitter. It didn't happen. And then after I realized that happened, I was like, okay, I want to switch it up and try to go hitter, hitter again. And as we'll talk about, I went with a pitcher with my second pick. So, to some degree, I want to switch it up a little bit, but it's usually when I map out my main events, I look at ADP as well and just see who I like in terms of who I think will be available when it's time to be my pick. So it's a couple different things that go into it.
All right. I like it. Well, let's get to it. We're going to kind of go through the picks, the philosophies, the good, the bad, the uglies that went through here. Before we get to that, anything else you want to discuss about your team before we kind of break down at least the picks portion of your team?
No, nothing high level. I'm sure other stuff will come up along the way though.
Perfect. All right. So round one, like we said, Ben had the 9th pick overall. Interesting draft for this. If we remember back, you know, in hindsight, we all think about this, but before the season started, Witt versus Ohtani versus Judge was a real question. That was actually a real question. So Witt went first in this draft. Ohtani went second, Judge went third. And that happened in not a ton of drafts. Usually it was still Ohtani and Judge, but Witt had his moments to take over first. What to me is surprising here, before we get to your team, Soto was fourth. That did not happen very often. Now, looking back, whoever Dylan is, great pick, because we know what Soto did. But more often than not, even in the 15-team main event spend, Soto was a late first rounder, more often than not, maybe even snuck in to the early second. To see him fourth overall, like, again, we're going to primarily talk about your picks, but what are your thoughts on this one? Because I literally, the first time I looked at the board, I just blew it up on my screen. That surprised me.
Yeah, my eye caught that as well. I did not realize that he went fourth in this draft. And I started looking at to see how the other picks went. And then I mistakenly went to pick team 3 instead of team 4. But so it went Soto, Harper, Burns, Duran, Altuve, Green, Suzuki. So some hits and some misses. It just shows you that even if you nail the early picks, it doesn't guarantee that your team's going to win, especially in a 15-teamer. Because you're going 30 roster spots deep and it's a long season, and it's I know on I think it was Mike the Mouth and Mark Winoker and Wax when they were talking about it on that pod about how like rounds 12 to 18. And I know Ryan always harps on this as well, but despite hitting on Soto, you still have to have some big hits later on, and definitely helps if you hit on someone like Soto, but it's only a piece of the puzzle.
It is only a piece. He still had some good picks, but yeah, the Castellanos, Ronaldo Lopez, obviously, impound, so on and so forth. We're not talking about his team, though. But the Juan Soto pick at 4, like, looking back at that, oof, that's absolutely amazing. When Ellie, J-Ram, Carroll at 7 was pretty early for Carroll, too, and that's big. Skeens at 8. Okay, You took Tucker at 9. If Skeens was there at 8, were you going Paul Skeens?
Probably not, because my target was Tucker when I mapped it out.
Well, I wanted to enhance on that, because Tatis, J-Rod, Churio were other outfielders taken in round 1. Why was Tucker, you know, everyone knows I love Kyle Tucker as well. Why was Tucker your planned pick at pick 9?
I just like the profile. I felt like he could go maybe not 30-30, but upper 20s in both categories, homers and steals. And I wasn't too worried about the trade, because he's just such a good hitter, Tucker. I was thinking 90 runs, 90 RBIs, and he's hit for a pretty good average this year recently. And he was for a while till he got hurt. He was in like the 280s at one point, and then after the hand injury, he kind of dropped down to closer to 260 Tucker. But I just liked the all-around production. And I also had targets of like Carroll and Soto, but they went before me. So I don't know if they were available if I would have – I think that they were like, if I get lucky, I would take Carroll or Soto. But my realistic target was Tucker in this case.
So this is where it's always – it's good and bad. It's like all the good, bad, the ugly of looking back at your drafts, because – it is good to look at your process to see what you need to do differently, and even to look in season. Just the idea that what if Soto or Carroll fell there and you take one of them instead of Tucker to your 12th overall situation. It's the little things. It doesn't seem like much, but it's those little breaks you get. Like, you still have to be a very good fantasy player for 27 weeks. There's no denying any of that. But, man, when certain things break your way in a draft, it changes everything. I know it makes too much sense, but – I always go back when I was – my first OC I ever did, Gilds was in, and that's the one Gilds won the overall in a couple years back. And to see he had, like, Goldie on his almost Hall of Fame – or his MVP season, Big Meat Pete. He had a couple – like, he had a lot of stuff fall in his direction. It was quite pretty. All right, so round 2, you like we talked about, you didn't go Skeens. You weren't going to go Skeens. You wanted Tucker. Scooble went at pick 13, so coming all the way back around now, a lot more outfielders went Yordan. Lindor went, of course, but Jazz, Duran, Betts, Acuna went. David had a Tatis Acuna combo, which is interesting. So you went Gerrit Crochet, third starting pitcher off the board, your first starting pitcher, absolute unit, strikeout machine. Was this part of the plan?
So this is interesting. So my target when I wrote it down was Trey Turner, and he is. And Crochet was what I called a fallback pick. And for whatever reason, I kind of remember pivoting in the middle of the draft. I go, I'm going to take Crochet instead. I don't know what really triggered me to change my mind, but I'm sure glad I did, because Crochet was a massive part to why this team was as good as it was. So yeah,
that's an ace,
yeah, I'm happy with that decision I made.
Yeah. And then, like, so we're going to kind of do like a strategy on what you did and other things, but like, you do very well in these 15 teams league. This isn't the first year you've had a contending team, is the way I'll say it. We've talked about this. It's pretty much every season you're at least at some point in the year fighting for some good finishing positions. Now, does it always end up that way? No, because that's fantasy baseball. But you're always fighting for it. Have you found it where, like you said, Crochet was a backup plan? For years, many listened to me and Toby talk, Pocket Aces. Toby's a staunch believer, and you need at least one or two like really good pitchers, especially in a 15. I'm starting to go that direction. I'm not like super aggressive on pitching, as everybody knows. In an OC, I took Peralta as my first pitcher in round 9. It worked. But are you a believer in these 15s that getting one of these aces needs to be a priority, or are you just like, okay, it worked out this way, so on and so forth?
You don't really need to. It's definitely a possible way to go. It because I think when I did really well in 2022, I started out 3 hitters in a row. And I ended up getting, I nailed my SPs 1, 2, and 3 in the like rounds 4 to 7 range. So it really comes down to the players, but I think I probably pivoted because I had already taken Gilbert. I already had Wheeler. I already had Reagans across my DCs. I wasn't a big fan of Burns and Sale. They kind of were scary. I had Snell already. So I think maybe I thought, okay, well, if I'm going to go pitcher in round 3, I don't want to double up again necessarily. And at this point, I only had Crochet in the Listener League auction, so I only had one share. And I think it was just because I don't know if the listeners remember who have been here for a while, but I added Crochet for one of my main events last season, and I was happy with how the White Sox managed his workload. I didn't because Crochet finished all of 2024, even though it was a reduced workload at the end in terms of innings per start, I felt like he had built up enough workload and he was filthy enough stuff wise where he could, there's a good chance that he as good a chance of any starter of making it through the season healthy as and with elite stuff on top of it. So, and then this team also ended up being really good in strikeouts and allowed me to go three closers for a good stretch to end of the year, because with Crochet as my ace getting almost 10 Ks like pretty frequently per start and some other pitchers with the high strikeout rate, getting those high strikeouts really is valuable early on if you can nail that. There's definitely pros and cons because a lot of the hitters are pretty safe usually. And I'm going to review that as well. Like how in terms of value, how did all the picks and all the rounds of the main event go? That'll be for the Patreon. I did that at the All-Star break, but just seeing, okay, how many pitchers busted in the second round by ADP, things like that. So I think, but with Crochet going back to that, is just the strikeout rate was pretty hard to pass up on.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. That's one thing I said going into this year. I want to focus more on getting guys with strikeouts. Now that might have hurt me in a ratio categories, but it also led me to a lot of Carlos Rodon and some other guys as my SP2s and 3s that racked up a ton of Ks, and we'll see where it goes from there. You mentioned not having Crochet, having Wheeler, Gilbert, and others kind of maybe led you to this Crochet pick. I know you don't do a ton of leagues. You're not one of crazy like me and others. Do you make it a point to diversify that heavily? Like, I only want one, maybe two teams with each guy on it.
Yeah, and that's something I've been questioning as I think back to this year because of how bad my other two main events were. It's kind of turning into like an all or nothing almost. At least that's how this year was for me in terms of my finishes in the standings amongst my 10 NFBC teams. To a degree, though, I will take some guys more. Like, I was big on Parker Meadows this year. I took Dylan Cruz on a handful of teams as well, but they were later round picks. It's just the early guys. In the first seven rounds or so, I'll be more likely to, among my 10 teams, not draft anyone more than three times.
No, that makes sense. You go all in, it can work out great. You can go 4-for-4 at a main event, or you can spread it out and at least get one in the top 10. So it's kind of a see where it goes in that regard. All right, so that was your second round pick. You got Tucker, Crochet. Now we'll wrap all the way around. King William ended round two, so we got King William off the board nice and early there. Your third pick of the draft, Manny Machado. That was the third baseman off the board. A couple comments, questions. You talked about safe hitters. Machado's one of the safest hitters you're going to find in baseball. Was this more of a pick of, hey, we know third base gets nasty, or did you want just that steady guy to back up your Kyle Tucker and Crochet start?
So going back to my roadmap, Manny was my target at this pick. So it was probably a relatively easy pick to make. And looking back at my rank, I actually had Manny right in line with ADP. So the ADP I had at the point of when the season ended was – actually, no. So across all main events, Machado's ADP was 39. I had him at 38. In terms of my personal ranking. So I figure, okay, this is a perfect spot to get him. And if he's there, I like him. But the only thing I was debating was Devers, and he had the issues with, I think he hadn't really played yet, the shoulder injuries. Cause I remember we had this debate over Devers and Machado, and I think it was mainly those two guys at one point. And I think the other hitter, so in the third round, I wasn't a big fan of a lot of the hitters. Because after that was C.J. Abrams, Freddie Freeman, James Wood. Abrams was – I wasn't big on that profile for my second hitter. I didn't trust Freddie's age. I wasn't a big fan of James Wood's profile. I actually had Marte higher up in my rankings overall, but I think the injury risk – because I've had Marte in the past. I wanted someone that I felt was a little safer. And I don't know how much third base played into it, but – it didn't really matter because I ended up doubling up on third base in a few more rounds. We'll get to him. But I just thought Manny was safe, and it was my first time drafting him as well. So I figured, okay, well, I think it's a good time to grab my last shot at Manny.
This almost feels like a FOMO draft with your last draft here, but it's so far so good in that sometimes, regard.
Honestly.
Yeah. All right, so we wrap around to round four here, and you get a closer. But first I want to highlight, first closer out the board was Devin Williams, the second pick of round three. Obviously, we know how that went. Emmanuel Clase with sixth pick of round three. We know how that went. Still at least decent for the start, all things considered. Mason Miller, 10th pick in round three. Josh Hader, 11th pick in round three. So you have four closers taken in round three. Rossell Iglesias with the second pick in round five. Edwin Diaz with the fourth pick. Ryan Helsley with the sixth pick in round five. So, Ben, at this point, we have seven closers off the board before, you know, between the start of round three and your pick in round four. Did this push you to Andrés Muñoz in round four, or was this a plan to get an early closer?
Actually, yes to both the questions. So I'm glad that I saved this because it's actually really fun to look at because it happens to me in 2022 as well. But so my target and pick in round four was Iglesias. Then I had Helsley and Diaz. So Munoz was actually my fourth option for this pick. I wanted a closer, and my top three options all went. And, of course, I got the one that had the best season of all of them. So it's just luck at this point.
Run good.
How that worked out.
That's funny. So I'm glad you have your little sheet there to navigate this. But that's telling. So that eight closers off the board by the seventh pick in round four. That says a lot about how these main events push things up. People talk about pitching getting pushed up. That was pretty tremendous. You're the fourth pitcher in the first seven picks in round four, fourth closer, I mean, and it wasn't even your top option, which is even better. Were you debating like a Johan Duran or any Ryan Walker, or was Munoz your fourth for sure?
Yeah, so for every pick, I have five columns, and I actually stopped at four players for the fourth round. That's funny. I don't know what I would have done. I did have pitchers up next for my fifth round pick, so maybe I would have pulled up a starter. But yeah, I'm not sure what I would have done. Maybe I would have gone another closer. I don't know if I would have taken Duran, though. I don't think I trusted him nearly as much as I did. I had Munoz ahead of Duran, obviously, but I don't know if they would have been close enough where I would have taken Duran if Munoz had gone.
Gotcha. All right, that takes us to round five. You mentioned you had pitchers on your list. Just for a couple names, Lawrence Butler was the first pick in round five. How that helium train worked this past season. Felix Bautista, as we thought he was healthy as spring came to an end, was the third pick in round five. Yamamoto, quite the gift to be the fifth pick in round or sixth pick in round five. There goes Tanner Scott with your fifth pick, the ninth pick in round five. Ben, you got your second starting pitcher, Pablo Lopez. Was he your primary target in round five?
He was not. So I was targeting Framber Valdez. Then I had a Schwellenbach ahead of Lopez and then King. So Lopez was actually my fourth option at this point. So
it's crazy, too, because Valdez and Schwellenbach went like two picks after your Munoz pick. So they weren't even close to being an option here.
Yeah. And I was going off of ADP when I was looking at these targets. And it just shows you that ADP is just a number and anything can happen once you get into a draft. So, I think this was a pretty easy pick as well. That once, okay, Pablo's the last one of these guys left. And I did say I had King ahead of him, but I had King a lot in DC. I had a King in a couple of DCs, and I think I only had Pablo in one DC. So I think I just wanted to make it 2-2. And I'm glad that I decided to go Pablo over King.
Yeah, that worked out really well. Even though Pablo didn't finish the season while he was there, it worked out great because King was worth a nothing burger. And Michael King went right after you, which says a lot. I wonder if David was hoping for Pablo Lopez himself coming through here. So through five rounds, you had Tucker, Crochet, Machado, Munoz, Lopez. Really great core going through there, especially in the pitching department. You know, Pablo's a bunch of potential ace. So you have a couple strong things going your way. We head to round six. This melts my heart. I don't know how he fell here, to be 100% honest, because this was a later draft season draft. This wasn't like I got Junior Caminero in like the seventh round of an OC that beat Bubba OC in February. And the helium was big with Junior Caminero, Ben. And to see him fall to you in round six with the seventh pick in round six, that is outstanding. Was he a target of you or was one of those like, oh my goodness, he's still on the board?
So he was one of the names I had written down in the sixth round. But I was targeting a pitcher because I wasn't targeting a pitcher when I took Crochet. So I ended up switching my plan to go back to a hitter. And that led me to Caminero. Because the other guys I was identifying in the sixth pick, in the sixth round, were Bybee, Joe Ryan, Bailey Ober, and even Shota Imanaga. Those are the four pitchers I was looking at. And then I decided, okay, I took Crochet earlier than I was planning. So let me go with the hitter. And I was big on, I was big going into the season on Caminero. I took him in my first DC and that was basically done. Because the price went up, projections came out. I know Steamer really loved Caminero. Then the other two, the Bad X ATC, kind of brought down my excitement because they were a little more realistic with projecting a rookie to be that as good as as Steamer was projecting. Because I remember there was discussion. I think maybe you and Ryan were talking about how Caminero kind of projected closer to Machado and Riley. Yep. He wasn't far off from what their projections were saying, and you're getting him so much later. So he was getting pushed up, Caminero, and I said, okay, well, I think this is a good time to get him again. And it was weird to lock up my corner at this point, but it paid off because Caminero was as valuable, if not more, than Crochet probably, based on where I got him.
Yeah, Caminero, like, you're going to crunch the numbers. We'll talk about a lot of that on a future show, plus you're right for the Patreon on some of the dollar values on some of these picks. I'd imagine, on top of my head, Caminero is at least a second-round value. Just could throw it out at there, least. If not higher. So, like, I know we talked about how I took him in the first round of the meatball, which started again today, by the way. I already made my first pick in round 12. Yep, we're already on the board in that one. So, yeah, Caminero in round 6 is absolutely beautiful. And it also goes to show you something. I know I've said it so many times. I've already said it once on this show. Lessons learned in these drafts, like I said, from the guilds. When he had Pete Alonso already and he backed it up with Goldie or vice versa, like super quick, most people don't want to. Like you said, I already locked up my corner. Some people in their heads don't wrap, like they can't do that type thing. In the end, we just got to remember, we're building the best roster. Doesn't matter how it gets there, just the best roster. It just means you have to do things different throughout the draft. When you're at this point in round 6, I know you're a heavy projection guy. You usually keep track of your numbers, I'm assuming, while you draft. We talked about this, but for new listeners, trying to throw that out there. So you got Tucker, Machado, and Caminero. You got a lot of guys that have 30 home run plus power. Batting averages are pretty decent, at least for the top two. Steals could be a question, though. Were you already making a point on your sheet? We'll get to this in the draft that, hey, I need to be maybe a little more aggressive on the steals side of things.
Yes, definitely, because amongst those guys – they were projected for 30 steals total. Tucker 19, Manny 7, and then Caminero 4. That adds up to 30. So not pretty good when you need to average like 14 a player. I think maybe if you're targeting 188 or so, which is what the NFBC 80th percentile had been going into this year. And if you're not getting those steals earlier, then it's going to be tough to get them later because the players aren't as good later. So yeah, it was definitely on my mind. And, this kind of led into what I was trying to do late in the season with this main event.
Got it. Britton Allen's in the chat. Hello, BNT. Starting with an ace like Skeen, Schoolberg, Crochet really paid off this year. It definitely did. All right, so we'll move on. That's your round 6 pick. Making the turn, coming all around. You did say when you took Pablo Lopez, you had Bailey Ober, Joe Ryan, and Shoto Imanaga on your list. Well, Bailey Ober went the first pick in round 6. Joe Ryan went with the 13th pick in round 6. And then it went Aaron Nola, Freddie Peralta, still fell to round 7 and a 15. Like, I know I love him more than everybody else. It's crazy. Then hitters, Bryce Miller with the 8th pick in round 7. And look who fell to you in round. Like, you mentioned some of these picks had to be pretty easy. Like, Manny Machado was the guy I planned for in round 3. You wanted Shota potentially in round 6, Ben, or 5. Like, he fell to you in round 7. How easy was that button to click?
I think it was super easy because the same thing happened to me in the New Jersey draft. I got Imanaga in the 8th round in that one. For whatever reason, people didn't like him in my main events. So to get him as my SP3 in the 7th, I was very happy, and it paid off. I was able to avoid Imanaga's blow up in the last start of the season. So his numbers for me were better than what his season long numbers were. And even though I think it was his hamstring he hurt or something. So he missed like a month or so. Imanaga was still super valued because his whip was so good. I think it was sub-1 for me, and if you can get a sub one whip as your SP3 with good volume, that's extremely helpful in the main event.
Yep. No, I totally agree. And so through 7 rounds, you got Crochet, Lopez, and Imanaga like starting things out for you. That's a pretty strong core. You got Crochet's everything he brings to the table. Lopez, when you're drafting, you're expecting good ratios and usually pretty good Ks. Like, he was once one of the other like almost 200K guys out there when healthy. And then you got Shota, who, like you mentioned, the ratios were great. Strikeouts, you never really know. We only had one season sample. So we'll see where it goes from there. But an awesome top three to go with Munoz and company. But with that, you know, seven rounds, he's got four pitchers, three hitters. You kind of had to know that bats were coming for Big Ben Ted here. So round eight. This is like and I remember when you sent me this. Like, this is a team of guys I love. Kyle Tucker, Shota Jr. Round eight, Ben's shortstop, Willie. I hit 30 home runs for the first Giants since 2004, Barry Bonds, Adamas, an outstanding pick. Obviously, the first month or two, Ben, didn't feel great. Maybe the first 3 months didn't feel great. But boy, oh boy, did he get comfortable and start swinging it really well. Now, was Adamas – I'm going to ask this pretty much every time. Was Adamas a target for you, or is it more so you're watching the shortstop landscape just dry up in this draft? You wanted Trey Turner earlier. You didn't take him. That would have been your shortstop. So I'm guessing you're looking at this board going, round before me, Bichette, Volpe went. Now, like, after him, it's Jeremy Peña, it's Xavier Edwards, Tovar, Swan. Like, things are drying up. Were you kind of pushing Adamas up, or is this what you wanted here?
He wasn't my go-to target at this point. I think we alluded to it before, is I didn't have many steals going into this pick. So I had written down guys like Christian Walker, Marcus Semien, Jake Berger, Dylan Cruz. But the thing was, I had Dylan Cruz on my first two main events, so I wasn't going three for three. That was for sure, and I'm glad I didn't. And I think he went before I even picked anyway, so I couldn't have taken Dylan Cruz. But, yeah, to your point, I think shortstop was drying up, and I knew that Willie wouldn't steal as many as he stole in 2024, but I knew he would steal some. And he's also pretty good because the average is always a question, but he's going to be good for RBIs, runs, and homers, which I want in the overall – for the main event, like as many top of the lineup guys who are going to get tons of plate appearances and drive in runs and score runs and have power. So unfortunately, Adamas was on the low end of his average projection. And that also was a problem for me late in the season, but he helped contribute to my runs, homers and RBIs that, cause those were like those three categories carried were like the staple of my hitting points, and then it was like the run, the steals, and the average that I had to work on. But Willie helped secure that at least. And to your point, shortstop was starting to dry up, and I thought that okay, well, I'm getting him where I think he's fine because he started going out in the hundreds. Willie, I think when drafts first started, and then at this point, it's pick 112, and I go okay, well, I think it's a no brainer because he had 30 homers again, and he had double digit steals. It was just the average that really hurt him, but I thought it was a good time to take him.
Yeah, I don't blame you. He did start falling when he signed with the Giants. Everyone was like, he can't hit home runs there. And I'm like, yeah, I know the ballpark sucks, but like, let's kind of take a step back. Like, I was more worried about the steals. And you basically have, when you're you finished with this pick, you had, you know, potentially 430-plus home run guys. And I mentioned earlier, one thing I tried to change drafting last year is focus more on strikeouts. That was a big discussion point on a lot of my shows. And then it's also the power department. Like, you can find steals on the waiver wire. That is a thing. Where, like you were saying it there, and if you got a guy that's hitting 30 home runs, that's at least 30 runs scored and at least 30 RBIs. Now, let's just be realistic on the rest of the spectrum there. So they're providing three out of the five roto categories you're looking for. You'd hope they'd hit 250. Obviously, it didn't work out. But if you're locking in all these power guys that on paper aren't batting average sucks, like – you're getting probably 3.5 to 4 solid categories right out the gate, and you can build around that. So it's another philosophy point that I always talk. I want like 5 category studs, and I still do in the early rounds. Tucker on paper, 5 category stud. But as the draft goes on, like maybe you don't force the hand on, hey, go get this monster instead of saying, I'm going to settle for so-and-so because they're going to provide X, Y, and Z. So I think there's a lot to be said. That's why I like these exercises here. And the Dodgers are up 4-0 as Hunter Green's getting shelled in his hometown. All right, we'll rip around to round 9 here, and Ben just adds to his power barrage here. He goes and gets Riley Green in round 9. Now, this is where my thick caveman head would never have come across this, because I'm looking at your roster, and I'm like, okay, he needs steals. Like, he's got power, fine. Power's fine. Obviously, there's never enough power, but power's fine. Riley Green does not run at all. Like, he's not going to run for you. And his average is always – there's questions there. He hit really well this year, so that helps. Was he a target for you in round 9?
Round 9, I actually – yeah, so I had Kenley Jansen as my target in 9, Tyler McGill, And then Green was my third target. And I'm assuming that Jansen and McGill both went before they got to this
eight.
Pick.
Yep, they went towards the end of round eight.
Yep. And I needed hitting still, so I said, okay, well, I'll take Riley Green. It was my only time I drafted Riley Green the entire season. And it paid off. But I was talking to the Gills with this, and it's with Green, I remember him being a prospect that had a ton of speed, and he doesn't steal. So I don't know. And I remember looking, I think he projected almost identically to Brian Reynolds, Riley Green. And that's
projection.
It's a safe projection though, and yes, it has upside because Riley Green's like 24 or 25 now, whereas Reynolds is like almost 30.
Which is crazy because the safe projection is probably what got you to like it more, because that's your style right there.
So I have it up and up. Green was projected for 80 runs, 21 homers, 73 RBIs, 6 steals, 265 average. So he has some steals. Maybe he has the speed for more, but going back to what I said about, I think, my Willie discussion, Riley Green, you're getting a top three hitter, top four hitter at this late in the draft in the main event. That's huge to get that many plate appearances, and especially with what I thought was a good hitter too, with upside. And it paid off, even though his average struggled at the end, Green, so it didn't really help me chasing top 10. But without him, I wouldn't have been as high as I was either, I don't think. So it ended up working out.
Oh, definitely. Like Britton said, it's under the radar how many homers Green hit this year. Yeah, honestly, if I wasn't doing a million shows, I would not have known, because it was so quiet what he was doing there in Detroit. I remember, I think there was one show I was like kind of downplaying him, and I pulled up his Fangraphs. I'm like, whoa, he's actually like really, really good right now. It was crazy to see what Riley Green was up to. And then in round 10, you got some steals. You got the GOAT, Mr. Randy Rosarena, just write down 2020 and hope he hits 240. That's all you want there, and he did pretty much that this year. Got you another 2020 season. Average wasn't great, but not as bad as last year, which was a plus. And he scores a bunch of runs at the top of that Mariners lineup. So that seemed like a no-brainer. Gives you three outfielders through 10. So you have four pitchers and three outfielders and two third basemen. You can talk on the Rosarena pick if you'd like. And how are you feeling after the first third of your draft, where it's an interesting balance compared to a lot of other drafts?
Yeah, I definitely needed steals. You mentioned it. I think Randy had 30, if not close to it. So that was huge. Yeah. And his average was 250 at one point, which I would have been so happy with. And then, of course, he slumped in the last 2 weeks, like my entire team did. And I think he was like in the 230s. So it was so close to being such a good season. I mean, it was still a great bounce back, but it could have been a little bit better. And but a 10th round Randy, based on when he's going 30-30 almost, that's huge. And that's like a kind of pick you have to make to make noise in the overall. I think you have to get like a early round pick, not in the early rounds. And the outfield, I didn't really mind, because I remember there was always debate about, okay, outfield drops off because of the platoons. And I was cool getting my third outfielder now because of some other targets that I had at other positions later, probably like post pick 200.
Agreed. Randy went 27-31 with a 238 average. So that gives you almost five guys 30 home run power. That's pretty good. Six guys with 30 home run power. That's pretty impressive when we get rocking and rolling. All right. So as we scroll down the board here, your round 11 pick. I remember you just sweating over this pick, like via text message. Like, not even in this draft. Like, this is a guy you liked a lot coming into draft season. And we would go back and forth on, is he actually the closer? Do you want him on this team? Is it worth the pick? So on and so forth. Well, right before this, there's two closers taken in round 11, Pete Fairbanks and Carlos Estevez. First, before we say who you took, were these of interest to you? Would you have taken either one of them over your pick?
It was Fairbanks, and who else was it? It was
Carlos Estevez.
No, I did not have them written down, I don't believe.
Okay, so the pick that Ben went with in round 11 for his second closer, which, now, you remember, folks, this is a 15-team main event where pitching gets pushed up. That was one thing where Ben would be texting like, okay, I'm taking all these hitters, but I'm getting hosed because like these clothes, like there's a reason he wanted Kenley at one time. Like these guys were on McGill because it's the tier drop offs. That if people remember the preseason shows that Ben and I did and me and Ryan did, there's tiers to these closers. That Kenley McGill tier, there's a big drop after that one. And that's where he's sitting at right now. And if he didn't get Justin Martinez with his pick in round 11, that drop off's even worse coming up after that. So what are your thoughts on this? And we'll obviously talk more about this in the Fab show, but already knowing in our heads, his second closer is Justin Martinez, and we know how that story ended. it goes to show you, I guess if you're short on saves, that's at least something you can address later on.
It is. I always say in my brief time in the main event, I'd rather be short in steals and saves than any other category. Yep. Because they're the most obvious, I think, in free agency to pick up. Like a closer is very cut and dry. You can always guess wrong. There could be like a Robert Garcia situation, but I don't want to pay up for my RP2 if I can avoid it. And even with my RP1, I waited for what, round 4 or 5 for Munoz. So I wouldn't go round 2 or 3 for a closer. But yeah, even just watching Martinez pitch, he's just filthy. And it's just unfortunate that because of how filthy he is, he hurt himself. So, and I had him on a couple of DCs, Justin Martinez, but I didn't have him down because your point, how I mentioned before, I wanted my RP2 in round 9. And at this point I just had to pivot and say, okay, I'll take him again just because I think the stuff's nasty. And at least in the main event, if he does get hurt or doesn't have the job, I can always fab someone. And that's exactly what I did. So this is like my first big miss, I think, but it's at a point in a position where I could afford to miss.
Yep. Yes. Definitely a position you can afford to miss. In round 12, you came with a second baseman, a guy that you've always liked way more than me. And
not anymore.
It was a rough season with injuries and just production, but I think more so injuries. But Ben went with Audrys Giménez in round 12. Again, here we go. You can fix things as you draft. Was this primarily, hey, it's a second baseman with speed?
Yep. He was projected for almost 30 steals, and I needed steals. And I had a lot of power tier, like you were saying, so I could afford to have a guy who's projected for fewer than 15 homers.
Now, Bryson Stott went 4 picks later. Was that ever a consideration?
Let's see how I had this. This is what, round 12? So at this point, I kind of stopped identifying targets because I think at this point I was so used to drafting that I figured I'd be fine. But if I go to my rankings, I believe I had – they're pretty close to back-to-back. I think I had – where is it? There's Nico. So in my rankings, I had them back-to-back, and I had Giménez ahead of Stott. Okay. I missed on that one. I would have much rather had Stott, and my season would have been marginally better if I had Stott, I think. So, oh well.
Yeah, no, this is always, armchair quarterbacking over here. Stott goes 4 picks later. 2 rounds later, Jackson Holliday. 4 rounds later, Nico Horner. His fantasy baseball. Bryce Terang went like 8 picks before him. Like if Bryce Terang would have fell, would you have gone Terang over Giménez?
No, I was avoiding Terang. Okay. I had him after both those guys. I mean, honestly, so I feel like Terang's ADP dropped because in my overall, I had Giménez 158, Stott 159. Then I had randomly Sandy between those guys, and then I had Terang at 161.
His
ADP was 161. So
towards the end of draft season, he was dealing with like a minor arm injury that they kept saying he'll be ready for opening day, but people were like, what? Like it was so fuzzy what was going on with him. Obviously, he turned out to be okay.
Yeah, it would have been a great pick if I took that.
Now I love what you, because you went heavy hitting, like we talked about, minus your closer Martinez. So it's like, okay, let's get back on the wagon. We got Crochet, we got Pablo, we got Shota. To double tap what you did in round 13 and 14. Again, I'm going to emphasize 15 team draft, so pitching's going crazy. To have Jesus Luzardo, who I loved for his price tag all draft season, I know you did as well, and Nick Lodolo back to back in 13 and 14. Obviously, we can look at how they finished the season and it helped, but just in, I would have loved that leaving the draft at that point in time. Were these targets yours, or were there some other pitchers that went that kind of skewed this?
Yeah, so I mentioned how I kind of stopped adding targets after round 11, but I added Lodolo on an island. Round 13 was my target because it was a FOMO pick. I hadn't gotten him yet, and I love Nick Lodolo last year. He killed me because of that one blow up start that ruined my one main event. But I've said I still like the skills, and I don't have him on any teams. I'm going to take him one time. So I made a point to make sure I got him. And I played ADP chicken because I like Luzardo as well. I had him in a main in a DC. I got him in my home league. So I had him, Luzardo, on a few teams. But this is kind of strikeouts. And you guys are talking about lefties all year. So at this point, I now have 4 lefty starters. I naturally gravitate to lefties, I think, when I draft already. So, but yeah, these picks were massive for making my rotation pretty solid all season.
Yeah, you hit on that last part. I was gonna mention that four lefties in your first five starting pitchers is as I seen on the cake for how well things went there. Scroll up just a little bit more for me, please. Get me to like round 20 if you can. Okay, perfect. So Nick Lodolo was round 14. The next four picks were hitters. So again, like I don't know if you can hit on if this was kind of a thought process or more where this the flow of the draft. You didn't have targets, as you mentioned, but now you're back to having two closers, five starting pitchers. You're pretty comfortable there. Like you probably were leaving at that point after Lodolo, you're like, okay, I can start Lodolo, Lizardo, Moniga, Lopez, Crochet every week. We're good. Let's go build some more and go get some more hitting context. So in round 15, you get Elliot Ramos, which again, you mentioned the potential platooning outfielders, which was a big thing. So you got a fourth outfielder that's not a platooning outfielder. That's huge. That already big boy stuff there. Then you go get Tyler Soderstrom in round 16. He's your first baseman, obviously. Also gets outfield eligibility later in the year, which is a whole other conversation. But we know the start he had. Another power bat, no steals, but power. You get Gleyber Torres to play middle infield. And then you got Matt Wallner. So here's your first platoon potential guy in round 18. So you went with the Ramos, Soderstrom, Torres, Wallner. You have your five outfielders. You have your corner infield positions all filled up. You have your middle infield. So you're pretty much locked in to your right. You have a util spot and your bench. And
and catchers.
Catchers. Yes, I forgot. The best position. You punted it. You still finished 12th. Kudos. but so through round 19, where do you feel you got this Ramos, Soderstrom, Torres, Wallner pick to really round things out? I guess I wanted to highlight the Ramos especially because like before that was Tyler O'Neill, Jake McCarthy, Cedric Mullins, Kerry Carpenter, who we knew was a platoon. I think Jerks and Profar was probably already suspended at that point, maybe not. Like there's a lot of moving parts with that. So where were you at on the Ramos, Soderstrom, Torres, Wallner section of your draft?
All right, so I pulled. So one thing I do is I write down the projected lineup position of every player who's for all 30 teams. And what I didn't do in my first two main events as much was targeting all as many players who are going to hit in the top half of their lineups. So going into this main event, I literally wrote down just like you would on the piece of paper I printed out that had all my targets by round. On the bottom of that table, I wrote out in the 200, 300 range all the players who had. That I liked enough and who also were projected to hit fifth or higher in their lineups. Because I just wanted to maximize the plate appearances for these picks. And that's what it was. So Soderstrom projected for fifth, Ramos projected for fifth, Torres was projected for third at the time of the draft, and Wallner was leading off in spring training, even though he was platooning. I said, okay, well, he's leading off. He has a ton of power. I could deal with that with my fifth outfielder. So I was just going for at-bats and ended up Ramos was like leading off a lot for the Giants. Ended up cutting Wallner, but that's fine. But Torres was always hitting like second for the Tigers. And Soderstrom was either third, fourth, or fifth all season. So, and he played the entire year. So they basically all beat their projections because they played at the top of the lineup and well enough to perform. They didn't get a lot of steals, but this is why my team was so good in runs, homers, and RBIs because of picks like this as well.
Yeah, just power department alone. My goodness. Like we said, like you said, runs, homers, and RBIs, they all go together there. This is a monster deal. Obviously, I have some questions here that I'll save for the fab part with like Wallner and some other guys as injuries and whatnot took place there. But at the point of round 18, you're sitting real pretty here, and it takes us to the back end of the draft now. Now's where you get to start taking some shots, round things out potentially. So you go with the Mr. Reverse Piggyback himself, the 19th round pick in Sean Manaea, which again, on paper, as your sixth starting pitcher, I know there's at this point in the draft, I'm assuming he's already got his injury. So we're kind of curious on how that's playing out because he would have got a lot higher at this point. So you're taking a chance there with Manaea. And then we'll talk about your catcher in a minute. But then in round 21, you also went with Tyler McGill, who's basically taking Manaea's spot while he's hurt is what it's coming around to. So Manaea and McGill, where were you at on those two starting pitchers?
I always tell myself never draft an injured player. But Manaea felt so close to being back that I figured it was a good enough time to take him in the draft. And also because of how much I liked my other five starters, I'm like, okay, I can afford to wait a little bit, I think, with Manaea and get him back in mid to late April or early, whatever the timeline was at this point. And at this point, I wish I never drafted him because once I did play him, he started out great and then he sucked. So it was a waste of draft pick and a waste of a roster spot. So I hopefully in 2026, I will listen to myself and not draft anyone who's hurt to start the season. And then the other one was Tyler McGill, and he always starts out great. And my thinking was, okay, I probably have a great April. He definitely did. And maybe it'll last a little bit longer. It didn't really, but he was good enough as my SP. Well, he was more like my SP6, even though he was my seventh starter that I drafted. But McGill was he was definitely useful early in the season.
Agreed, agreed. Again, we'll go back to your catchers later, just because I want to get an overall catching discussion on the show. Why not? But in round 22, you got a guy that I know you've picked up in Fab throughout the year too. That's on a different show. But Evan Carter, who I know talking with you, and I agreed with most of it, is because I picked him up as well in Fab. Like, the skill set is nice. Skill set's nice. It's a platooning skill set, but again, it's around 22. So yeah, we're there. But the ceiling feels like it'd be pretty cool. Be like, he's young, there's speed, maybe some pop, good batting average. Evan Carter's your sixth outfielder. Basically, you could have him or Walner in during the weeks. What was your thoughts with Carter? Was it a ceiling play? Was it a, hey, I need more speed play? Where were we at with Evan Carter?
It was both. One point I always made in justifying my love for Evan Carter this year at his ADP was going into 2024, I went back to this projection. He was projected for almost 2020 with a good average. So I said, if he's healthy now, the skill should still be there, and you're getting him around pick 300. The Rangers, that we thought had a decent lineup, maybe he could be one of those Buxton-like picks or George Springer-like picks where they end up just outperforming their draft cost massively. But, of course, his back is done, it seems like, Evan Carter's. So, and I thought he could hit for a good average as well. And, yeah, to your point, I could have started him as my SP5 over Walner. It could have just been off of matchups. So I'm probably out on Carter now because I gave him another shot. So, but if he's available in Fab, I'll always add him in Fab just because it's a lot less to lose.
Agreed. Like I've said that this past year, I ended up picking up Alec Bohm and Max Muncy in leagues in Fab. Like, I just don't draft those guys, but in Fab, everyone's got a price, as the $1 Million Man once said. Hayden Wesneski in round 23, very popular late pick. You liked him. I liked him. Ryan liked him. Many others liked him. The ceiling looked great there. Injuries happened with Wesneski. You also picked up Mike Soroka, Dean Kramer, and Shane Smith in the final rounds to round out pitching. Why don't you highlight what your thoughts were on a Wesneski, Soroka, Kramer, Smith column? Again, for my two cents, and obviously you run with this, they're in a starting rotation. They're potential fours in a rotation, which means they could be a potential six or seven in a fantasy. That's where I see it. But what were your thoughts on those four pitchers?
Yeah, I like that Wesneski was going to the Astros because he was a pretty popular prospect with the Cubs when he first got called up. Didn't really do that well, but I figured if anyone can turn him around, it would be the Astros. And he was doing great until he tore his UCL. So his ERA is a little high for me, but his whip was really good, and that was really valuable for a pick at the slate. So I think it was a good pick. It's just that people are going to get hurt, and that's what's happened with Wesneski. Same thing with Soroka. He almost had identical lines for me when you look at your team stats for, like, when they're in your lineup and versus on your bench. Soroka had a little bit of a high ERA, but his whip was always really good, and that's why I was confident starting him, because I'm like, if his whip is going to be this good, it should mean that he should be better ERA-wise going forward. And then he's had the shoulder injury or whatever it was, and he kind of like what was Wesneski, but Soroka had success. I think he tore his Achilles twice or something like that, so he was out for a while when he was with the Braves, and I figured just take a shot on him, and it was a good pick at this point in the draft. Dean Kramer was, so those last two guys were, and even McGill, so McGill, Wesneski, and Soroka were kind of high upside strikeout names, so I wanted something a little more stable, and so that's why I went with Dean Kramer. And then Shane Smith was kind of in line with McGill, Wesneski, Soroka, just a spring training guy came out of nowhere, really showed good stuff. And even though he's on the White Sox, Smith was still valuable for me. I didn't play him all the time because I had like a really great top seven most of this early on in the season. But when I did play Smith, he had good stats for me. So it ended up paying off.
Yeah. And one thing, I'm just doing a, 30,000 foot view of this back, 10 rounds. A lot of the pitching taken, not all, but a lot, were like, hey, they're young guy chances. They're a lot of shot in the dark guys, where you, like I said, you have guys you know are going to be fourth or fifth, like they're locked in, and you can run their easy drops if need be and go that direction. you seem to take your chances with a couple players. We'll talk about it in a minute, but potentially your pick of the draft, potentially in round 24, was Mr. Rice Baby himself, Ben Rice. And I say that because every time Ben Rice hit a home run and sometimes just did cool things, the Rice Baby gift would show up in the Discord. And it got to the point now when a home run would take place, people would tag Ben and go, "Hey, Ben." And that was pretty much it. It was like the bat signal. Like, "Ben, you're up. Like, let's go. You're slacking on
me." Literally.
And so for many reasons, A, because you're the big Ben Rice fan. B, he was awesome this year. C, he eventually got catcher eligibility, which will lead me into catching after this. So where were you at on this Ben Rice? Is this a I'm a Yankees fan. I know he's good. He should get, like, because I didn't really know how to feel about him in draft season.
Right. And later on, so if you're watching on YouTube and Bubba, you can see it. So in the same round, the other first baseman who went after this was Spencer Torkelson. So I was between Rice and Torkelson for this pick. And I think I went Rice just because of the Yankee bias that I have. And early on in the year, I was it seemed like it was great that I went with Rice in April, and then he kind of cooled down, and then Torkelson just kept going. I'm like, I think I made the wrong call. But then once Rice got catcher eligibility and ended up like getting, well, he never really stopped. The results kind of cooled down, but he kept smoking the ball every time he hit it. Rice, his Statcast was phenomenal the entire year. Like, it was elite of elite. If you're listening to the show, you didn't have Ben Rice, go check his Statcast page. You're going to be wildly impressed. And because of how I ended up drafting, it worked out because I needed him desperately as my catcher. So I held on to Rice the entire year, never cut him, even when he was losing playing time in July or whatever month it was for a little bit, because I knew how good he was. And I said, I need to hold on to him and see how it goes. But I mentioned how I was trying to get guys who were hitting at the top of their lineups. Rice projected for like eighth coming out of spring training, but he ended up hitting first to fourth the whole year. Once his April started happening and he's just kept hitting homers, Boone moved him up to the top of the lineup and he just stayed there. So getting a top of the order hitter in round 24 is massive. And especially he became a catcher after that too. So even as a corner or first baseman, Rice was valuable. So it was, these picks are hard to hit. So I got really fortunate with this one.
But these are the things that have to hit to finish where you finished. Like, you, exactly. And you said it early on. I know it's Ryan's go. That's how Ryan Life first, he started coming on the bench with Bubba. We did it every year. Let's do rounds 10 through 20 or whatever. Like, the middle rounds, how do you do things? You take your shots late, but I commented like on your pitching. You took your shots with your pitchers, but they're also kind of safe shots where you depends on what levels of shots you want to take. Ben Rice, yeah, we talk about the catcher eligibility. You hoped he would get there someday, but you only had – you had Soderstrom at first. He was still a question mark too. So you might want to take a shot at first base. You know what I mean? Like, there's – you needed that at least potential backup. Now he could also play corner, even though you already had corner pretty much locked in. Let's be honest. That wasn't changing anytime soon. But to bring Ben Rice to catcher also is tremendous. I remember the biggest sweat that a lot of us had at one – because I picked him up in a lot of 12-team fabs, like, pretty quickly – after seeing how he started talking to you more, like, that was a pretty easy decision for me. But I think our biggest gripe for a long time with him was the inconsistency in playing time. Like, what are we doing here? Like, I know they had to play Goldie, but it eventually became a strong side platoon where he outplayed Goldie, which was nice. And then he started catching and the rest is history. But yeah, Ben Rice, the beast, really curious what his 2026 looks like. We'll talk about that at a later date and time. But since we're talking Ben Rice catcher eligible, means you didn't really need one of these catchers, and I'm pretty sure you didn't end the season with either one of these catchers. You took Danny Jansen in round 20. After Jansen, the likes of Francisco Alvarez, Jonah Heim, and Sean Murphy written round 21. Luis Campusano and Patrick Bailey in round 23. I'm just saying those so people understand with the level of catcher that's not out there right now at this point in the draft. So there's punting catchers in the 12. You can survive. Punting catchers in the 15, you need to accept that it's going to be nasty and you might be streaming off and on throughout the season. Were you planning on punting catchers? Because it seems like you were, the way your draft was going. Was this a part of the plan and you're cool with mixing and matching to figure it out?
Going back to my roadmap, I did identify catchers in round 11 and 18, but here we are in like past that point. So I missed the boat on... I identified Wells and Bo Naylor for whatever reason, Austin Wells and Bo Naylor. So I'm, for my average's sake, I'm glad I didn't get either one of those guys. But I don't typically wait. I usually try to get one catcher in my teams at least in the early 100s or by pick 150 when like the sweet spot usually is for catchers, it seems like every year. But at this point, I just said, okay, I'll take whatever's there. Because I was kind of just going for value early on with my other picks. I was just taking volume and taking good solid pitchers. So this is more of a value draft, I think, is what kind of happened here. And I liked Jansen more than the other guys you mentioned, Alvarez, Heim, Murphy. Because I think I had Heim last year or in the past. He just faded, and I don't think he's that good anymore. Sean Murphy's always hurt. Alvarez was hurt at this point, and I didn't want – because I already had Manaea, I didn't want to take another injured Met. Patrick Belly went after this. Jansen's upside more. Campusano has no power. I think he may have been hurt as well. So it wasn't a lot to choose from. I think I was kind of happy when I got Jansen. I'm like, I really need Jansen.
I'd go Jansen for sure. I'm with you. But you get to Andy, Miguel Amaya was already gone. So you're pretty much hosed again. Yes.
Yeah. And the thing with Andy, I don't know if people remember, if you're normal and don't play a league this deep, you wouldn't realize that Andy was playing first base for the Pirates to start the year because, what's his name? Spencer Horwitz was hurt. Yep. So I said, well, at least for now, I'll just grab a full-time first baseman as my catcher too and see what happens. And we'll get to what happened in the Fab review next week. But it kind of worked out. It could have been better, but I had a replacement relatively early.
Yep. And again, I've said it for years, as much as I love catchers, if you're not going to be aggressive on them, you can stream catchers throughout the year and make things work. It is very doable, even if it's an Edgar Cuero, which we'll talk about later because I know it's one of the directions we'll be going on this show. But yeah. There are options. And he's much more palatable in a 15 than in a 12. Your final two picks, not in that order, in round 28 and round 30, because we talked about our pitchers, were two hitters, Luis Angel Acuña, who I had high hopes for this year, obviously did not pan out. And you took so these are two big-time shots in the dark is what you took here. You took Acuña. And then with your last pick, you took Zach Veen. So obviously, Veen had the high expectations, did not work. And Acuña was back and forth, so that did not work. But where were you at on these two picks?
Just needed steals. Because I going out of this draft, I knew I was short in steals. And I just wanted some upside plays that could steal for me. And I saved a lot of money in Fab by drafting Veen and not fabbing him. So
that's true.
So it worked out by at least stashing him.
So you still had him on your roster when he got called up.
Yeah, I was laughing at everybody else as they were spending $200. I was like, guess who already has him?
he's only available in 56 leagues. No, I'm scared.
I think it was pretty close to that. I think maybe one other league he was taken he got called up. So, yeah. Didn't work out for either guy, but I took my shots on steals at least.
Yeah, but just kind of looking back on the 30 rounds here, we talked about how your approach early, you got your starting pitching, your closers, loaded up on bats. You went with the heavy outfielders onward as we went going through there. We talked about how you can get saves and speed on the waiver wire. You drafted accordingly for that. I've always said if you can catchers, you can stream. You have that's an option, at least with this team. The rest of your positions, you have a really solid like core. Going there, like barring injuries, which obviously there will be in 27 week seasons, your offensive starters and your pitching starters are pretty locked solid when all things are considered. When you left this draft, how were you feeling about things? Because that's the one thing a lot of people will say in a 15 team league, you're going to have at least one hole when you leave one of these drafts, sometimes two, hopefully not three, but you might. But that's just a 15 team league in a nutshell.
I think, honestly, it was my least favorite of the three main events I drafted.
That explains a lot. That's how it always works.
So I need to start hating my main events going forward now, I think.
Just go draft the most uncomfortably looking thing on the planet and see where it goes. Go, would Bubba take this guy? And if he answers yes, probably don't do it. But just throwing it out there, see where it goes. But yeah. I love this exercise. I don't want to ask too many questions because I know it's going to filter into the Fab talk when this goes forward here. But any final thoughts on this thing? I have one question in the chat here from Britain before we finish it up here.
So what I did was I did this earlier tonight and I did it in the past. So I jotted down all my projections for the guys I drafted into my starting lineup and then what they finished at. So my projections were 919 runs. All the guys I drafted finished at 947, so off by like 30. I had 30 more. Homer's projections wise was 271. They finished 297, so almost like 26 more. RBI's projected for 916. They finished at 926, so pretty close there. This is really close. So the steals were 134, which is very low because the target's like 180. So the guys I drafted had 139. And collectively, they hit worse than what they projected for average-wise. So I was like, 947 for runs was actual amongst the guys I drafted. I ended up finishing with my team as 1,110. Ooh. So I gained 150 more, at least, runs by fabbing and this fabbing. So I'm learning that the draft is important, but it's not everything. And the guys I drafted, they had 297 homers, I said. I ended up with 324 for my team. 920, this is a big gap as well. 926 RBIs, 1,084. I ended up gaining only 18 steals because I was trying to fab steals late in the year, and like Andres Jimenez really hurt me there. I'm going to call him out all day, rest of time. Andres Jimenez, you suck. And then average, of course, I think my team was projected for 250 average, and I basically finished 250 average, I think is what happened. So the projections were pretty close, but they weren't enough for what I ended up doing. I had to fab a lot more. I got guys like, well, I'm not going to get into it, but we'll talk about that next week to your point as well. But so the projections were pretty spot on for my team in terms of overall numbers. They ended up outperforming guys like Caminero and Riley Green, even Machado to some degree. Well, yeah, Machado and Tucker kind of hit their projections, but I think Randy improved in a few spots. So yeah, overall the team kind of did how they were projected, so that the projection wasn't as good as it should have been. So I had to do some work.
Yeah, no. I think I always love doing these exercises. There's going to be more like this, hopefully, throughout the offseason. I have some other things lined up, hopefully. Ryan's pulling stuff off for the Patreon. We're going to go through a lot of kind of looking back at successful drafts, how we think things were built, so on and so forth. And it's just interesting because obviously there's many ways to build a team, many ways to win a league. It's one thing I'm always trying to get better at, especially in 15s. That's why I love having you on as a guest with me to kind of get both sides of the story. That's why I loved having Toby for years. I love going like your success, the way you draft, because you are I hate saying the word, you're a safer drafter. That's not fair, I think, but it's kind of the philosophy, like your floors plays, which is something I always try to wrap my head around. I told you, like I said, like I want to fill my roster. I don't need to do this or that. And maybe that's not the case type thing. So that's why I love these exercises, to kind of run through it, especially, you know, why it's still kind of fresh. It's been 27 weeks, so it's not that fresh, but it's still fresh. If we waited until March, they'd be mindset somewhere else. So these are good exercises. I'm looking forward to doing the fab discussion next, because Ben's a maniac and has most of his stuff pretty much saved and lined out, or he will by next week. Let's put it that way. Like, because he had it all last year, and it was awesome to go through. Like, this is why I draw two, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's a really cool story. Like, Jenny Butler, she's been on the show before. Many people know Jenny Butler. She legit keeps a journal of her ad drops throughout every single league, every single week, with like notes of why. So she can go back and look at what she was doing. Everybody's different. Everyone does what works for them, but it's always good to learn and build off good and bad to see where things can go from there. So question in the chat real quick, Ben. Britton Allen says, how did Team 13 end up in the league? He started out Scoobal, Freeman, Jazz, and Raleigh on the same team in a 15-teamer. That does seem pretty good.
All right. It is Aspite, right? Is that yes. There's an issue right now with this. Let me see if I can why is this doing this?
I think they're starting to change over the 2025, and it's gonna be harder to get back. Stuff.
But yeah, so, well, you're gonna see he came in fifth.
Okay, so still a pretty darn good season, all things considered, in a 15-team league. But
only 36 hitting points.
Only 36 hitting points with that start. So that tells you things did not go well elsewhere. And that happens. That will happen, indeed.
Yeah, we had Diaz, Ozuna, Christian. Well, huh? That's weird. Well. Yeah, that's a good pick. That's fine. That was good.
Devers is good.
Okay, bad, awesome. Well, amazing.
Yeah.
Walker was okay. Maybe his average. Okay.
Average must have crushed him because Devers only had 230. You got Vinny P. Spencer Steers hurt.
Stevenson
was hurt a lot. Chris Morales, those his late picks didn't pan out at all. So when the early ones struggled, he was pretty much host.
I wonder if he dropped Jacob Wilson at some point.
That's a great question, because that would have helped his batting average a ton. Mm-hmm. Fifth place is, to me, fifth place, I know it doesn't pay. People want, you want to win. I get it. I'm not clueless, but fifth place out of 15 in this kind of a challenging format is still, it's very good in my mind. It's obviously not what you want. I get all of that, but I think it's still a pretty strong showing, because those are not easy leagues at all. All right, Ben. Final thoughts as we wrap up this episode. Part two will come at you guys next week. Date to be determined with my crazy schedule and Ben's niceness to work around it. So we'll figure that out. But any final thoughts?
No, I'm very thankful for this team. It was good to finish in the money in the main event again and win another main event league. I had some heartbreak last year when I was first and won my mains going into week 27 and I ended up finishing in third. So luckily, this one never was in question, really. There was a point earlier in the year when I moved out of first, but I almost ran the table, I think, in this league all year, which makes it much easier stress-wise.
Yeah, it seemed like you're pretty dialed in on this one for most of the season, and it goes back. And you said the L word a few times. You do have to get lucky throughout the season. Your big dogs avoided injuries. That's huge, especially in a 15. And because a 15 replacement value, we talk about all the time, it's no good. Like in a 12, you can lose a pretty early pick and still kind of make it work if you are aggressive and hit the right waivers throughout the year. In a 15, you only get a few like Nick Kurtzies. You don't get a whole lot of options that are going to be game changer picks per se. So you got to run pretty good in that regard, which you did. And also you made some other good moves along the way, obviously, but that helps in a big way. To go through.
Yeah, I was looking, first 10 picks all hit, and I say even Pablo did because he had 100 good innings for me or whatever it was before he got hurt. So no landmines in the first 10, and that's huge.
That is tremendous, and we can't wait to see how he fixed whatever landmines he found and upgraded elsewhere on next week's part two, where we talk fab, where, you know, if you listen to the show with us every week, you got Ben's fab recaps, but now we're going to put it all in one spot with more of the process behind it and how it helped him finish 12th in the overall. But until then, make sure you follow him on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. I'm at BD Entrick. This was Bench with Bubba, episode 785. Catch you all next time.